We're doing the Navi Yeshayah. We're up to what's called the 8th chapter, the 3rd Pasuk. God had told the Navi Yeshayah, take a large piece of parchment and write on it in a large print so that people can read it, that there will swiftly be a time when the destruction comes to the northern 10 tribes and they will be looted. And so Yeshayah took on witnesses, two great people, Uriah the Kohen and Zechariah. And we learned the Talmud in Makos last time about why these two prophets were chosen as the witnesses for Yeshayah's prophecy. And he fulfilled his obligation and wrote this big sign about the great destruction that was imminent. And he had these witnesses sign on his prophecy that was now on a big banner. Vayikra vel hanevi'ah. And then I came close to the prophetess. What does that mean? That means he was intimate with her. Vatahar vateled bein. And she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. Vayomer Adonai Elai Kera Shemo Maher Shalal Chash Baz. God told me, name him Maher Shalal Chash Baz. Remember those words from the first verse? Go back 2 verses ago. Those were the words he was supposed to put on the sign. There is going to be looting coming swiftly. The looting is heading here quickly. Maher Shalal Chash Baz. So that was the words of his sign. And now Hashem tells him, that is the name you should give your son. Looting's coming quickly. There's going to be a quick advance to loot the northern 10 tribes. Ki, what?
Interesting name for
what a name, yeah. Yeah. Interesting that the prophet's wife is called Nevi'ah. And the Radak writes, Lo nikra shem hanar bedalet tevot ha'ele ke'echad. So the Radak was bothered by what you said. So he gets an aliyah, Maher Shalal Chashbaz. So the Radak says, no, he wasn't named these 4 words. Ela amar sheikru shmo Maher Shalal o Chashbaz. One of the two. So he only had 2 names. Either Maher Shalal or Chashbaz. Because they're both a repetition of the same ideas we discussed then. So it seems from the Radak that he had both names. But you'd only call him one of the two. Either you'd call him Maher Shalal or Chashbaz. Okay, either way, that's not, that name didn't stick in Judaism, right? People are looking.
What's the parochial looting?
There's going to be looting coming quickly to the northern 10 tribes, yeah. So we understand why that name didn't stick. Ki beterem yeida hanar kiro avi ve'imi. Because before that child knows to say Abba and Ima. Yisa etchil damesek ve'eit shelal shomeron lifnei melech Ashur. Before that child is old enough to know to say Abba and Ima, so that means before he is a year old, a year and a half, right? There's going to be a king, the Assyrian king, who will come and loot Damascus and loot all the loot that's in Shomron, in the capital of the northern 10 tribes. So being that they were contending with the threat of the forces of Shomron unified with the forces of Damascus, the two had unified as a unified front to attack the Judean king, So they were given this prophecy that the northern 10 tribes, together with Damascus, would quickly be looted by the Assyrian Empire. Now, there's a point to ponder here. What is the child called in the Pasuk? What's the word the Pasuk uses for a child? Nar. Isn't that interesting? So this is one of the sources that has to be analyzed when we speak about Moshe Rabbeinu. The commentaries ask. It says that the daughter of Pharaoh finds the baby in a casket in the Nile. And it says, Vehine Na'ar Boche. So the commentaries ask, why is Moshe the baby called a Na'ar? The Midrash already discusses it. But here we have another source that calls a baby a Na'ar. So that's what we would assume. Na'ara is an adolescent. The question is, what is a na'ar? So ordinarily we assume na'ar is a young lad. But here you see that na'ar is not necessarily a young lad.
Maybe they're just not naming him until he's older.
What?
Like we already have this in young, that like, you don't name a boy until the birth, right? Maybe the, everything going on,
they're
taking a little bit longer to name the child.
No, it says before he'll know to say Abba Ima.
Well, wouldn't that be given then? If they would name him before that? Like, I don't know.
Again? I didn't follow. Okay. Now there's a medrash here. Amar Rav. Rav said, Ba alehim sancheriv barbeim chamisha elef bnei melachim yoshev bekonot shel zahav v'imahem shegal bayit v'zonot. When Sancheriv came to attack, he came with 45,000 princes, and they all came with their golden chariots, and they all had their mobile homes coming with them, and inside those homes they brought along their prostitutes. Uvishmonim elef giborim levushim shiryonot. He brought 80,000 knights dressed in armor. The alaf. And soldiers carrying spears and shields in front of the army. So the question is, Alpaim going on the Shishim Elef. Alpaim the Shishim Elef. I think it's 2,060,000. So that would be 2 million, right? But maybe it's 2,060,000. I don't think so. V'acharav, parashim. And behind this huge legion were also horsemen. And this is the same size of the army that came and attacked Abraham. V'chein atidin lavo im gog umagog. And in the future, when there's going to be that ultimate war, so the Medrash says there were three great wars against the Jewish people in history. The first was the war against Avram, where they unified the greatest armies of the world to come and take down Avram. That's the famous war of Avram that night with Lot. The second was this war, when they laid siege on Jerusalem in the days of Chizkiyahu, and that's where Chazal say Chizkiyahu could have been the Mashiach had he acted correctly after the great miracle. And so the third great war is when Jerusalem will be under siege again, when the troops of Gog and Magog come, which will again number hundreds of thousands, according to the Midrash, even millions. I don't know. B'matnita Tana, orich machaneu, 400 parsa. In the Braisa it says the length of the camp was 400 parsa. How much is a parsa? Parsa is 2 mil, right? So that's about 800 miles. Okay? That's how long the camp is going to be. V'rochav machaneu 40 parsa. And the width of the camp is... And the width of the camp is 40 parsa, which is 80 miles. If I got my math right at this hour. Rishonim avru nisahu shneimar v'chalaf biyuda shataf v'avar ad emtzaim avru bekoma shneimar atzavar yagiru v'achonim elu afar b'ragleihem v'lo matzu mayim lishtot v'nahar. So they came on a great, they come on a great stream that's outside Jerusalem, and the first group, they floated across the river, but they took some water with them as they passed through. The second group could walk through the river. The third group, by the time they came to cross, there was no stream left. It was all dried up by the troops that had passed through. They had no water left to drink. That's how dry the area was. That's how big the troops were. They had to actually import water for them. And this is the camp that laid siege on Jerusalem in Hezekiah's time. It says the Assyrian camp had 185,000 soldiers. So Rabbi Avu says that's talking about the generals. 185,000 generals were there. Ravashi says, yes, that can be seen, indicated by the verse, that it says, God will deal with the fat ones. The fat ones is a reference to the generals. Rabbi Elazar says, Hashem smote them with His hand, and the hand that smote Sancheiriv was the great hand, compared to what happened with Egypt. When it says in Egypt, Vayar Yisrael et hayad gedola, it says Israel saw God's great hand. It means Israel saw a manifestation of the hand that was yet to come against Sancheiriv. Meaning the great redemption from Sancheiriv was greater than the redemption from Egypt. That's how great the miracle was. In Egypt, it's saying they saw what was yet to come. But the great thing was what happened with Sancheiriv. Rabbi Yoshua says, Rabbi Elazar says, Hashem hit them with His hand. Rabbi Yoshua says, Hashem hit them with His finger. When the Egyptian sorcerer said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God, that's again, the reference, the finger that's yet to hit. Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Yosef Aglili, says, God told His angel, Gavriel, is your sword, is your sickle sharpened? So Gavriel said, my sickle is sharpened from the 6 days of creation. And then God said, okay, so the time's come to use that sickle. And that's the idea that the angel came down. It says the angel came down and killed out the camp of Sancheiriv. And that's the same angel that appears in Daniel to save Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which is Gavriel, the angel Gavriel. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, when did all this happen? All the fruits were blossoming. So it was time to harvest the fruits. And God said, before you go and harvest fruits, let's go harvest the soldiers that are threatening Jerusalem. One understanding is He just blew at them. Another understanding is that Gabriel just clapped his wings or hands and and everyone died. And Rav Yitzchak Nafcha says, which is the Medrash that's quoted by Rashi throughout, that all he did was open their ears. Our sages say that the soldiers standing there around Jerusalem were given the capacity to hear the angels sing in the morning. So as dawn broke, the angels give song in heaven, and the soldiers were allowed to hear that song, and that's why they all dropped dead. How many were left of the 180,000? Rav says 10. Remember, 180,000 generals. And Rav Shmuel says 9, and each one brings a proof. Different opinions how many were left. Rav Yochanan says there were 5. Sancheiriv, his two sons, and Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuzaradan. So that's 5. Those were the only ones left. And that's where Nebuchadnezzar goes over after this great defeat, and he goes and rebuilds the empire, which became the Babylonian Empire. Okay, the Medrash keeps going, but I this is the... Okay, maybe we should do a little bit more in the Medrash. Rabbi Meir says, if not for the verse spelling this out, we wouldn't be able to say this. It says, on that day, God takes the sickle and uses it to harvest the Assyrian king. God showed up in the form, God showed up or sent his angel looking like a man and said, before you went and gathered all these kings from the east and west, you gathered all these mercenaries to come and harvest my kids. What'd you tell all them? So Sancheriv says, I said to them, you guys are also scared. Okay, we'll leave that. Yeah.
Did you say that God came down in the form of a man?
So it's the Midrash is when the Midrash says it, the Midrash means like he had a. They saw a vision or they had a dream, or it doesn't literally mean, you know, the Midrash uses all kinds of terms. Like even in the Tanakh it says, Hashem ki gibor milchama, Hashem shows up like a brave warrior to split the sea. Does it mean Hashem literally came down and said, okay, you go this way, you go that way? The psukim use metaphorical terms about Hashem. Hashem's horse led us, it says in the Song of Songs, Hashem's horse led us through the splitting of the sea. Yeah, Hashem has a horse. Is it white? Is it blue? Is it purple? Is it rainbow colored? You know.
It's a unicorn.
It's a unicorn. Okay. So, the verses and the Midrashim will often use metaphorical terms. It says, Daniel sees God like an old man with white hair waiting a white talis. Okay, so that's God, an old man with white hair? Really? Santa Claus? No. What?
And a white talis.
No. So I'm saying, you know, people are tempted. It's very tempting to draw a vision. The metaphors are there to tell us ideas, but not to be taken literally. Okay. Again, I didn't understand.
Because you said that this is like the wiping out of this camp was one of the bigger things in Mitzrayim, because it was like the hand versus the finger, and when they saw the hand in Mitzrayim, it was referring to this. So if this is such a bigger deal, why is there so much more emphasis put on Mitzrayim than there's like almost nothing put on this?
Because it became a nation in Mitzrayim.
Right. In terms of the miracle, this was a great miracle. We have a blessing if you see the place and you know where it happened. But
we talk about like all the miracles that happened during the Mitzrayim. So we don't talk about the nation, but like when we talk about like all like the plagues and everything like that, like, you never have any holiday except for anything like this.
Right, right. That deserves a discussion, right? Okay, maybe we should go through the Midrash. The Midrash says, Hashem showed up to him and said to him, you took all these princes and you brought them with you to fight this battle, and they're all dead. What are you going to tell their dads? You're coming back from this war with your two sons, but all of their sons died. What are you going to tell their dads? So Sancheriv said, I've been worried about that too. Sancheriv says to God, what should I do? So God tells him, why don't you go get dressed up? Go into hiding. So he says, how do I do that?
Sancheriv was having prophecy right now?
So that's why the Midrash doesn't want to say Sancheriv was having prophecy. That's why the Midrash says Hashem showed up like an advisor and asked him this.
Call
it prophecy. I'm saying the Midrash is telling you an idea here.
As far as I understand prophecy,
that's a broad discussion which we had in the beginning of Parshas Vayeras, where Maimonides and Nachmanides discussed that. So God tells him, take a pair of scissors, if you want, there's a, he took a candle and the candle burnt down his beard, and then he took a pair of scissors and he shaved his head, and he's getting prepared to come back in hiding. And then he goes to Noah's ark and he says, now I'm in trouble. All these kings are going to be upset at me. How am I going to escape that? All the kings are upset at me. So he takes this plank of wood and he says, gee, if this plank of wood saved Noah from the flood, this is something that can save a person when everything around them is making trouble. So he says, you wood, you're going to be my God. You're going to save me. And he says, if I make it back and everything works out okay, so then I'm going to sacrifice my two sons before you, he says to this plank of wood. His sons heard this and they say, he's seen all these miracles and he still didn't do tshuva. He's going to bump us off? No way, we're bumping him off. And they killed him. And that's what it says. He was bowing by Nisroch Elokav and Andermelch and Sharetzer, his own children killed him. So that's the Medrash. Okay. So Hashem is saying things are going to happen real fast. The destruction of the north is going to happen real fast. And Hashem continued and said to me the following. Being that many of the people in Judean territory wanted to defect to the north, they said, we want to be under Pekach ben Remaliahu. We don't want to be under the Judean kings, the descendants of David. They seem to be too calm for us. We want to go with these people who act quickly. We want to join the northern 10 tribes. We want to join Damascus. So Hashem says, okay, you want things to go fast? I'll send you a swift river. I'll bring the Assyrian king. That's the great waters. That's the great troops that we just learned about in the Medrash that will descend upon Jerusalem. And the stream is going to come gushing down. It's going to come like a stream that's filling all its capacity. So too, the Assyrian Empire is going to come. And it will sweep through Judean territory and conquer all the cities of Judea. It's going to come up to the neck. And that's the idea that he's going to conquer all Jerusalem. Everyone's going to run and get into the capital. And the only city that's left is Jerusalem, up to the neck. And his wings will spread, they're going to extend throughout your land, Judea, you Judea who call yourself Immanuel, God is with us, and you have my temple in you, and I will protect you. But you should still know that I will allow the Assyrian Empire to take over all of Judea but Jerusalem. And now what's going to happen, that's what we're going to learn, Bezachem, next time.